Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Friday morning. And a special surprise this morning that I did not anticipate, but boy, am I glad to see it. Teron Davenport in studio this morning. TD, what's going on? How are we doing?
I'm doing well. Timing is everything. My daughter, Devin, didn't set her alarm last night. She woke up late, so we're running 20 minutes late. And it just so happened that dropping her off, coming back, I literally was driving by the studio when it was time to come on. So I said, well, let me just pull in. It makes sense.
Oh, that's awesome. We appreciate you being with us this morning. There's a lot to get to with you, TD. And I heard you and Jared talking yesterday about the running back position. Obviously, we know about the Derrick Henry being shopped and the reports that Mike Silver put out there earlier this week. But one person you brought up was Bijan Robinson. And I'm really interested in him just from the standpoint of your vantage point on what kind of a back you think he can be at the NFL level, and how much consideration, if any, do you think the Titans give to going that route, given the way that their offense runs and what player he could be at the NFL level?
Yeah, Bijan Robinson is a complete back. He's a guy you don't have to take off the field. He's one of those guys that you could continue to feed and feed and feed. But then on top of that, he's a home run hitter too. You look at Texas film, you see so many times, you know, he's breaking off a long run. And then he catches the ball out of the backfield much better than what he got the opportunity to do so at Texas. That's one of the things I love about the drills, the field drills that they have at the combine. And you see him just naturally catching the ball. And that is something that I think is really attractive about him. And I've said this a few times. We have this whole thing where the running back position is devalued, and there is less of a premium placed on it. But I tell you what there is a premium placed on: playmakers. And that's what Bijan Robinson is. And so I think that's why he has a little more value than a lot of these other backs that have come out in recent years. And he's a total package.
Well, sticking on running backs, TD, tons of talk, of course, especially in the last few days about, you know, Derrick Henry, you know, being shopped, however you want to call it, without knowing exactly the conversations or who had the conversations. But what is your read on that? And what if you had to guess, you know, what would just a straight up trade of Derrick Henry bring back? What would it be?
I would say probably a fourth round pick, third round pick. Because although there is a premium placed on playmakers and Derrick Henry is a playmaker, the question is how much longer can he be that playmaker? And at 29 years old, by his own admission, that's old in running back years. So that is something to look at. As far as the situation with them, I'm going to believe Mike Silver's report. He is well connected. And when the report came out, I just was thinking back on being in Indianapolis. And I remember seeing him multiple times talking to people. So I know for a fact he was chatting. So you look at all that, and I look, it's really one of those things where it's, okay, how do you define shopping? Is it one of those, okay, going out and aggressively, hey, listen, I'm trying, what do you want? Or is it going out, listen, we're considering offers for Derrick Henry. What are you willing? So there's different ways to look at it. I think it would be wrong to not at least get a gauge. There's a new GM. He's getting acclimated to just how trade value and everything works as far as talking to other GMs. So I don't see anything wrong with it. And on top of that, at the very least, you're getting an elite player that's going to be motivated. Those top guys, they always find ways to find extra motivation. So at the very least, you put another chip on the shoulder.
TD, from your vantage point, how would you describe what you saw from Treylon Burks in year one and what you think that could mean for him as he heads into year two now? It was really a wild year when you think about it, from the from the asthma stuff to the mini camp to the injuries that he dealt with on the field. And then as the season went on, making some plays down the field that you're saying, okay, maybe cooking with gas here. What are your thoughts on Treylon Burks as he heads into year two?
Yeah, that Green Bay game is the one that stands out to me. And the fact that he beat Jair Alexander on that play. Jair is one of my favorite corners in the league. He's one of the best corners in the league. Treylon cooked him. And I think when you look at Treylon Burks, the thing with him that you got to remember is that this time last year he was training, well, just got done training for the Underwear Olympics, right, at the Combine. So it's different when you're doing that type of training than football training. And that's something that we talked about a lot at Locker Cleanout. And he can't wait to be able to focus on football training. And being in the league for 1 year, it gave him an understanding of what he has to do with his body to get it right, to be able to be more durable. So I think this is going to be a big year for him. On top of that, the asthma situation and the conditioning, that's behind him now. So you don't have to be concerned with that. And even though Tim Kelly is the new offensive coordinator, a lot of the concepts and things are going to be similar. So he'll be able to play fast, and that's something that we tend to forget with especially receivers, how many adjustments you have to make on any given play before the play and then also during the play. So it's a lot harder to play fast. But now that he's got a year in and that he's got a better understanding of what he's asked to do, I think it's going to happen.
Petey, do you think that Nicholas Petit-Frere could be this team's left tackle? I ask that because I have my doubts that they would get into the Orlando Brown sweepstakes. Mm-hmm. But I do look at a guy like Mike McGlinchey, you know, could be a not super expensive answer at right tackle. But to me, only if NPF, who of course played left tackle at Ohio State, is maybe better on that side. Do you think that's a possible outcome here with this offensive line?
I think it's possible. And it's funny talking to some of those O-line specialists at the combine. I mean, now you got guys who just like they focus on one position and they know that position inside out. And they're like Rain Man of that position, right? So that's what a couple of these guys that I talked to, they said that they would rather have him on the right side. I would probably agree, but as you mentioned, he played left at Ohio State before. And if you don't get Paris Johnson Jr. and you end up in a situation where you got to get a guy in the back end of the first round or at 41, a Darnell Wright, a DeJuan Jones, these are guys that could come in, you put them at right, and you flip Petit Frere to the left side. And then as you mentioned, the free agency option, you know, whether it's Caleb McGrary, who the Falcons just released, or as Mike McGlinchey, I don't know that there's going to be interest in those guys. I don't think the Titans are going to be too active free agent-wise as far as that first wave. And those are guys I think are probably going that first wave.
So to that point, because I think Joe and I agree with you, like the – I don't know that I expect a ton of activity next week for the Titans in the first part. So What does that signal to you about where they are with their roster? Does it say more about the free agent class that, you know, some of these positions you look at, maybe it's not as loaded with talent as they want it to be? If they're not active, what does that signal to you about what that means for the Titans?
It's a combination of things. I feel as though money-wise, you look – they're going to have to stroke a pretty big check to get into this stadium. So that's something that you have to consider. But then also you look at the top needs, right? Offensive line. Okay, yeah, Orlando Brown's there, but do you sign him to a big deal? I wouldn't. The Chiefs are letting – for heaven's sake, the Chiefs are letting him go, right? Mike McGlinchey, that's an interesting one. I would strongly consider that, but – I say all that to say you look at the different position groups where there's needs, wide receiver. I'm not paying big money for any of those guys, right? I go get a Paris Campbell, Marvin Jones, one of those types, Mecole Hardman, Nelson Aguilar, for a heavy discount. So all of the positions, for the most part, edge, I wouldn't pay. I'm not going out there edge and bringing in a guy either. So it's kind of – a perfect storm for them in that they're looking to be more active in the second and third wave, and there aren't any really franchise-altering free agents in the first wave of where what they need anyway.
If they get, let's say they do that, get, you know, sort of a veteran, you know, not expensive guy, receiver to, you know, just have a veteran in the room, you hopefully, you know, it works out better than Robert Woods, which of course, you know, that was a much more expensive, contract. But let's say that happens. As you said, Treylon Burks emerges into a wide receiver one. He's healthy. Do you still feel like pretty high in the draft they would need to still hit that position?
Oh, absolutely. And I would – listen, I would draft at least two receivers this year. And obviously that's all considering how the board falls and stuff like that. But I would definitely look at wanting to add a few receivers. And you could go top end. You know, Quentin Johnston, he's so attractive as a player. He measured in at 6'2 instead of 6'4". But, man, when that guy is on, he's on. And – he's someone. Or you could go, Zay Flowers, who I feel is the best in this class. You could go later. You have guys like Jonathan Mingo out of Ole Miss. You got A.T. Perry, who is not really getting any fanfare, but you look at the numbers, over 1,200 yards, I think like 8 touchdowns, a bunch of catches. He's 6'3". He ran in the 4.49 range at the combine.
Did it a couple years in a row too with that production.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a dude where you see him go up and get the football. He runs that dig for you. He does all of that stuff, back shoulder. I really like him. So there's a lot of options that you could do. Even if you get a guy who is gradually developing, like a Dontavian Wicks out of Virginia, didn't have a really good 2022, but we know the situation, the stuff that happened there. And quarterback play was sketchy, but 2021, he produced. So this class is deep receiver-wise. You want to get a burner. Tyler Scott out of Cincinnati is a track runner, averaged 43 yards on each of his touchdowns. So you have that too.
TD, last thing for you here. How do you anticipate this Lamar Jackson situation playing out? We know he's on the non-exclusive tag for the Ravens. Teams can try to negotiate a contract with him, and then the Ravens can either match it or they can let him go. How do you see this situation with Lamar Jackson playing out?
Yeah, it's funny to me how so quickly teams came out and said they weren't interested. Like, last time I checked, there's no legal stuff associated with him. So what on earth would make you want to – or no severe career-threatening injury associated – how do you just come out and say, oh, no, I'm not interested in Lamar Jackson, within hours of him becoming possibly available? That's baffling to me. I think it plays out. He's going to end up back with the Ravens. And it's unfortunate for him because I don't think he's going to get the deal that he's probably seeking. And it's almost like there's a little teamwork going on to make sure that, hey, all right, that Deshaun Watson thing is one of a kind. As far as a big guarantee like that. We got to remember, though, Lamar hasn't come out and said, hey, I want $231 million guaranteed. He hasn't said that. So this conclusion that people have drawn that's where he is, I don't agree with. End of the day, I think he does end up with the Ravens at a deal that's not what he was really anticipating or deserving of.
Do you think there's a chance if they can't come to a deal – does he sit out? Do you think there's a chance that could happen?
I don't think so. I think he plays.
I mean, that's still $32 million. Yeah, you'd be passing up right still, there.
And I think he plays and balls out and comes back to the table again. It would only hurt him to sit out because, you look, he's played well.
Yeah.
I know he missed the last 5 games or so, but he played well. Look at him. You're still sitting there. So it wouldn't work for him to sit out.
TD, thanks for being with us. We appreciate you dropping by.
Yeah, no problem.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. We'll take your thoughts, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rexro, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio. Brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. I got a pair of two-day passes to the sold-out Moon River Festival on the banks of the Tennessee River in Chattanooga coming up on September 9th and September 10th to give away. Performances by Goodbye Road, Nickel Creek, Marcus King Band, Judah and the Lion, and more. Be caller number 5-615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a pair of two-day passes to the Moon River Festival in Chattanooga coming up on September 9th and September 10th. 615-737-1025. Thanks to Teron Davenport for being with us in the last segment. And we're a few days away from NFL free agency beginning. And Joe, pretty much everybody that we talk to, including you and I, don't expect a whole lot of activity from the Titans in the first part of free agency next week. And we've gone over the reasons. We've gone over the wide receiver class and the lack of really any significant talent that's there in terms of game-changing wide receivers. The edge part of it remains interesting. Like, I still, with all the needs they have offensively on the line and at wide receiver, I do wonder, with Bud Dupree going to be cut coming up on March 15th, like how they address edge. And it could be as simple as the draft, but we've talked about it. You don't have enough draft picks to draft everything. So how do they address the edge part of it is going to be really fascinating to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are we went through it. I mean, I think that there are some names in the bargain bin of the edge group that to me are a little more appealing than like the receiver group, for example. But you never know. I mean, like Aguilar, there's an interesting name, you know, on the receiver front. That I mean, maybe I do see the value in some kind of reliable, solid veteran to come in here and be like your third, fourth receiver. But I also feel like NWI has kind of become that guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's a veteran by now. He's been around a little bit. He's been through some changes. He's improved a lot. He's kind of a great example of maximizing your talent.
So, well, with Race McMath being the new number one for the team, I mean, he could really slot into the number three or four role pretty nicely.
That is fair. TD didn't mention Racy, did he?
He did not.
That's fine. You guys, we'll see. Now, Jared from Spring Hill got mad at me. He said, oh, you're not going to get all over TD for wanting a running back early like me, because I yelled at Jared from Spring Hill. Who is not the other Jared? I don't think.
We don't think.
Did TD say he wanted him? He was just talking up.
Yeah, I don't think he said he wanted him. Right.
Yeah. I guess we could have followed up with that question, but like if TD was drafting for the Titans, I don't think he's drafting Bijan Robinson.
Well, to me, like if you're trading Derrick Henry, that's one thing. If you're not, then why would you do that?
Right. And that may have been part of, you know, what Jared was talking about there. From Spring Hill, to be specific. But, I mean, if you move Henry, certainly if you think Bijan Robinson is worth a number 11, boy, that is rich for a running back these days. You could do that, and long term, that could be a great answer for you. But look at all the other needs that are not being filled for next year. And what does that do for you next year?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And I still – we're going to come out of free agency in the draft, and there's going to be glaring holes on the roster still. Like, there's no way that they're going to be able to fix all of them. I mean, think about last year, right? I mean, the conversation we had going into camp was, ooh, man, I don't know about right tackle. Like, you've got Dylan Radins, and you've got Nicholas Petit-Frere, who they just drafted. I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work out. Maybe they should go out and get somebody for right tackle, and they didn't, and they chose to go with Nicholas Petit-Frere. It was interesting to get TD's thoughts on him moving over to the left, too. Like, I'm with him. Like, I think him being the right tackle next year is by far the most likely option. I would think you agree with that, too. But if you are going to go get somebody in free agency as a tackle, would it make more sense to go get a right tackle that you feel really, really good about and then move him over there, and maybe that's his better side, rather than spending $20 million or whatever the cost would be to get Orlando Brown Jr. and bringing him in here as your left tackle?
Yeah, I still feel like if nothing dramatic is happening and you're addressing for next year, I just think it's the probably the most boring scenario of everything. And it's the most mock scenario, but I think it's drafting a left tackle. It's drafting your next left tackle and hoping that Petit-Frere continues to improve and solidifies right side. And if you're solidified long-term with rookie deals at right and left tackle, that's a good place to be.
Yeah.
The Titans have tried for years now to have the next wave there, and they've got to hit big with some choices coming up on the offensive line.
Is Aaron Brewer – like if so if – let me put it to you this way. If Ben Jones decides that he's not coming back and that he's retiring or whatever, is it as simple as Aaron Brewer is your starting center, or do they need to be on the lookout for another center, be that in free agency or be that in the draft?
I think that almost gets into best available type situation, where if you come across one of these centers that you love and it's possible to get him at a certain point, then you do. But between Brewer and even Corey Levin,
yep.
I mean, I think you could make it work there. Definitely, I believe that Brewer, from the time he got here, he has been viewed as at least, you know, a depth guy. Probably better as a depth guy, but if as a starter, best as a center, you know? So, I mean, that is certainly where you have the most undersized guys can thrive at that position. And they love Brewer's intangibles, intelligence, toughness, all these things. And so, like, in terms of the intangibles, he could slide in for Ben Jones, and I think the coaching staff would be happy with that. But there's still the matter of just sometimes getting gobbled up by, you know, the big defensive linemen. So that's another great question. You know, do they view him as a viable starter at center? Do they view Petit Frere as a possible left tackle?
Coming up next, we'll get into some comments that SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey had on our show earlier about SEC football scheduling moving forward and what exactly that could look like. We'll get into all that coming up next. The college basketball tournament right around the corner, and it's time for you to sign up to play the official Game Bracket Challenge brought to you by Twin Peaks, home of 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports. Go to thegamenashville.com/bracket challenge or the Game Nashville app now to sign up and play. Brackets will open up after the teams have been selected coming up this Sunday. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5-106.3 The Game. Join 102.5 The Game live from the Rusty Nail on Friday, March 17th for the opening round of the tournament. Enjoy $3 Tulane draft beers while watching some hoops during a St. Patrick's Day celebration. The Rusty Nail is located in Hermitage and provides a great local atmosphere with a large outdoor patio and volleyball courts as well, plus great drinks and great food, especially the wings. That's at 102.5 The Game live at Rusty Nail at 4054 Andrew Jackson Way in Hermitage coming up on Friday, March 17th. Doors open at 10 a.m. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5-106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Friday morning. We had SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey on the show earlier this morning, and we got into a variety of different topics with him. But one of those topics was SEC football scheduling and what that could look like as it moves forward here. Obviously, Texas and Oklahoma will be joining the SEC in 2024. There's been lots of discussion about three permanent opponents for each SEC team and what that could look like. And we asked Greg Sankey about that earlier. Here's what Greg Sankey had to say.
Is it accurate, Greg, to say that, you know, ESPN revenue increase going to 9 is a huge key of that decision? And also, do you have a list? Like, do you know the list right now? Do you have a working list somewhere, like in your pocket or in your computer? Like, these are the three if we go to 9, or, you know, is that fluid?
There's a lot of fluidity to everything, and the pieces to the puzzle aren't attached to just one element. I think there's a lot of commentary about TV's control or influence, you know, really going back to the expansion itself. That was about Texas and Oklahoma wanting to affiliate with the Southeastern Conference, and that television conversation was in the background. I'm one who never thinks in life that money leads. I think it follows really good decision-making. And so our focus is on kind of the competitive aspect of what we do. We obviously have an interest in what our broadcast partner will do, because the year we expand, 24, is a year of enormous change. We'll go to 16. The Big Ten will go to 16. We'll move all of our TV inventory to the Disney, ABC, ESPN platforms. The CFP will expand. Those are really important data points for us. And we have a number of models. I'll make that observation, number of models. We've developed over 40-plus different ways to look at football scheduling. Those have been narrowed. A lot of speculation about three games. If we have a nine-game schedule, who are teams' three primary opponents? That's an overread of the situation. Every one of our schedules will be either eight or nine games. And the only correct analysis is to look at the full season schedule, not one-third of a season's schedule, if it was nine games. We also know that, you know, history and rivalries are really important in this league. And one of the really, I think, meaningful aspects of our expansion is, unlike most every other conference expansion of which I'm familiar, this one brings back rivalries.
So that was Greg Sankey on the show earlier today here on Robbie and Rexro. Joe, what did you make of that answer that Greg Sankey threw out there in terms of conference expansion and what the scheduling part of it could look like as we move forward here?
He didn't tell me if he has his list of three.
He did not.
I want to know the list. Yeah, and I hear what he's saying on the whole schedule, but obviously there's a, I think it's appropriate for the focus to be on the three protected opponents, because for each team, that's the three teams that you know you'll play each year. Now, again, that's with the nine-game schedule. I don't know who exactly – basically, people who cover college football saw credit, you know, our people, the Athletic, you know, Nicole Auerbach, and I know Ross Dellinger. Basically, anybody who's been writing about this has written pretty extensively about the revenue aspect. So I hear what Greg Sankey's talking about. I think that's a good philosophy. You know, you do good things, revenue will follow. But if you're the SEC, and certainly there are people in the SEC, the athletic directors, who feel this way, if you go to nine, you should get more money from ESPN, and that's still kind of murky. I think if first of all, it's hard for me to believe that ESPN wouldn't agree to that. Now, what are the specifics? I don't know. But if ESPN does agree to that and it's satisfactory, then I think nine is done. I think nine's going to happen. But that is an important aspect of this. You know, if ESPN's going to balk at that, then there are definitely programs in this league that would rather see this league stay at eight games.
For sure.
And it kind of breaks down by the haves and have-nots, right? And it's like if you're a program that, you know, needs a certain number of wins every year to get to kind of like the baseline expectation of at least getting to a bowl game, you know, that's a lot different. You're looking at this stuff a lot differently than the top programs in the league. But ultimately, I do think that – I can't imagine ESPN won't give more money, which would make nine – a certainty, and then you can get to the arguing about, you know, who's protected and all that. I mean, I think it's sad. It appears to be a lot of momentum that Tennessee, Florida is going to stop being an annual thing, and I think that stinks, but it's certainly not the only thing. You're not going to make everybody happy, as we have seen with Nick Saban and some of his public comments.
Well, I see Nick Saban is really pushing hard for, you know, Vandy and South Carolina and, you know, maybe Missouri on the other side of things too.
You know, like, what about the Missouri-Alabama tradition? You know, are we just going to ignore that? Actually, Alabama and Vanderbilt do have a very rich tradition.
They do.
So, I'm just saying.
Maybe that's the route.
Nick has a point.
Maybe that's the route that they could go. We'll see what happens there. The TV part of this is interesting. Also, I enjoy – and look, this is not a Greg Sankey thing. This is a commissioner thing at whole. Like, Gary Bettman is an absolute pro at this kind of stuff, too, in terms of, like, the – well, everybody talks about like the TV money being a big part of the negotiations. It was actually Texas and Oklahoma really wanting to be a part of the SEC, which I get it, but let's not act like TV money was not a big part of this.
Yeah. Look, I agree with the idea of if you're just following, okay, this is more money than this. I mean, it's almost like let's go to recruiting. Let's go to NIL, which, you know, we didn't have time to get into that with Greg. But, you know, it's like if you're only basing on, okay, there's a little bit more offer here, and you're not thinking about academic programs, coaching, teammates, role, all those things, then that's probably a bad way to go about your business. But, yeah, it's ultimately this is obviously big business, And this is, you know, the SEC, you add Oklahoma, Texas. Think about the television product. And with nine games, you think about the – and he's right. Texas and Texas A&M, they're going to play every year again. That's awesome. That's one of the few – as much as I hate expansion and all this these silly monster leagues, I mean, at least you get stuff like that that you can bring back, you know, in some situations. I mean, it's going to be an incredibly valuable product and commodity, and so the money has to follow.
I would say the nine-game conference schedule, three-team annual opponent list that Ross Dellinger put out there the other day from Sports Illustrated is pretty interesting. I mean, we've talked about the Alabama part of it with Auburn, Tennessee, and LSU. In this one, Tennessee's three opponents would be Vanderbilt, Alabama, and South Carolina. And for Vanderbilt, it would be Tennessee, Missouri, and Auburn. So those are the three opponents that Ross Dellinger put out there the other day.
Yeah, now and now this is – some people, I think, took him as reporting.
Right, this is not an official list.
No, because he said, like, we took our best guess at the three opponents.
Right.
And I just – I look at this. I mean, there's some kind of cool ideas, like Florida, Oklahoma is an annual thing. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, Tennessee – okay, wait a minute. You said So his – the one I'm seeing here on his story was Tennessee with Vanderbilt, Alabama, which is, to me, slam dunk, and then South Carolina.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Which – oh, okay. What? That's a 6 o'clock hour.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, no, it's not. No, that's right. It's not.
It's almost nine. 20 minutes to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Quinn just peed again. Sorry. I South Carolina to me is, now I'm sure, like, if you're Tennessee, you probably can see the bright side in that because you probably feel like that's a little bit over a long period of time. You should have a little bit more of a break there with South Carolina as opposed to Florida. Although right now, I'm kind of interested in what Shane Beamer's doing over there. And I'm a little bit unsure of where things are going with Florida. But I just, like, tradition-wise, this was the biggest game in college football for a decade, I swear. Like, it was as big as any game in college football in a given season was Tennessee-Florida. And I know that was a while ago, but that's if you have that amount of time of something being that great, that's what you do. That's when you establish tradition. So I really hope Tennessee, Florida is preserved.
Shout out to Auburn, who has the three permanent opponents, according to Dellinger, of the idea they put together is Alabama, Georgia, and Vanderbilt. There you go. Here's Vanderbilt, and then we'll throw Alabama and Georgia at you every year.
Who does Kentucky have?
Okay, so we're
Kentucky would
looking
be
at different lists.
I've got it pulled up right in front of me.
His story that he the one that I have pulled up, his story that he wrote a little while ago, is he had Auburn, Georgia, he had Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina for Auburn.
I don't know.
But I don't know.
Couldn't tell you.
So we are looking at different lists, but only Greg knows for sure. And he makes the decision. That's the thing. Like, he is going to put these together.
Yes.
I mean, he and his team, you know. And that's I think about the DMs and texts he's getting from all these coaches, man. That's got to be so fun.
Do you think they've got this list figured out by the time SEC Media Days rolls around here in Nashville?
Yeah, I hope that what happens is the spring meetings in Destin, it gets nailed down as nine, and I hope they're ready to bring it out then. But maybe it will be a bunch of haggling over months. I mean, it's got to be by SEC Media Days, right?
You would think. I mean, 2024 is not that far away, so it's got to get figured out at some point.
Yeah, and I mean, look, ultimately, like, you just have to – you're going to piss off half the league.
Yes.
And you're going to have some things that don't make sense. There's no way around that, but just do your best. And, you know, give Alabama, Auburn, Tennessee, LSU, and let's all enjoy Nick Saban
melting
at
down.
SEC Media Days.
It'd be awesome.
Yes.
Make sure you tune in today for SEC Men's Tournament updates on 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Toyota. Buy at toyota.com. Ready, set, go. Get your Toyota today. Toyota, let's go places. Coming up next, it's time for Call Your Shot Friday. We'll take your bold predictions in the world of sports. Hit up our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5-106.3 The Game. And it is that time of the week, time for Call Your Shot Friday here on Robbie and Rex Road. As always, we'll take your bold predictions, your called shots on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Your called shots now on the text line, 615-737-1025. Joe Rex Road, how did we do last week in Call Your Shot Friday? I know that... For instance, all of us had a destination as to where Dante Fabro was going to be traded, and then hours later he signed a contract extension. So chalk that up as one we missed. That was good stuff.
Yeah, I had Fabro to the Pens. You know, Ronnie Hacksaw, you blew it, man. You had him to the Sharks, and Nick had him to the Kraken. I got Nick also with Giannis at least one home game for Nashville SC, which I think he's got a good chance at that. And Luke Evangelista at least 4 points on this road trip. Does he have four already?
He's got three for sure.
Okay.
I need to go back and look.
I think that's going to come through for him. Robbie, you also had the Rangers will lose in the first round of the playoffs, so we remember that one. You have the Aggies winning the SEC tournament.
I do.
And you have McDonough traded this summer back to the New York Rangers. So you got some long-term stuff cooking on your shots last week. Okay, so let's see. What did I do? Oh, boy, a lot of good ones. First of all, long-term, John Hines will be the Nashville Predators coach next season.
There you go.
There's a The Vols will win at Auburn Saturday. Didn't happen. And, yes, that was a shot. I said Julian Phillips will score 15-plus. I said Belmont men's basketball will win the MVC title in their first crack at Arch Madness. They did not. They lost.
Women's did.
Yeah, well, so the tournament, they won the regular season. The tournament is this week. But they have a great chance. Destiny Wells, fantastic player for Belmont. So this is funny because I'm looking – first of all, I said Boston Bruins gonna lose in the second round. So remember that one. We had a lot of long term ones last week. I had a fourth like week. My last one was I said Vanderbilt will win two games and get to Saturday. Now, of course, remember the bracket was not established at that point. So I have a shot this week that is going to blow up that shot. So there we go.
Okay.
But I guess that means I'm gonna get maybe one of them right.
We'll see what happens. Michelle, kick us off with today's edition of Call Your Shot Friday.
I would love to because I wasn't here last week. So, okay, here we go. I had this shot a couple weeks ago that Arkansas will win the SEC tournament. So I just want to make sure we still got that one. Did that one a couple weeks ago. We've got UK Vandy tonight, which I feel like is me living in Nashville. UK is my old home. Okay, so this is going to be a double one. So are you ready, Joe?
I'm ready.
I'm going to pick four players, two from each team. They will all have double-doubles.
Wow.
Okay. So we on the UK side, we've got Chris Livingston and Jacob Toppin. I'm not going to pick Oster because that's not a shot. And then on the Vanderbilt side, we're going to have Ezra Mannion.
Filet.
And Jordan Wright.
Okay. All right. I like that.
So double-doubles in different ways.
Correct.
Yes, in different ways. Yeah. So like Ezra assists, yeah. Things like that.
Yeah.
Then Tennessee will lose in the first round of March Madness.
Jeez.
And St. Peter's joke can go away.
Wow.
Okay, so those are my called shots. Only a couple today.
There we go. Joe Rexroad, your called shots of the week.
Okay. Kentucky beats Vanderbilt tonight on an Oscar Tshiebwe putback in the final 2 seconds.
Ooh.
Of the game. And if you remember last time, you know, Vanderbilt had a lot of good defensive possessions. They won the game, but they had a lot of good defensive possessions that ended up with Tshiebwe still getting the offensive rebound, and I think that's going to put them out tonight, and they will be a number one seed in the NIT. Kentucky, so of course, again, this blows up my shot last week, but hey,
I thought you were saying bracket. Kentucky was the number one seed in the MIT for a second.
Well, Cal couldn't handle that pressure.
He couldn't.
Kentucky beats Alabama in the SEC title game on Sunday.
Okay.
Tennessee will be a three seed And Green, so I'm trying to think. So as we call, I'm going to call a shot for next weekend because at that point they could play Thursday or Friday. But, yeah, we'll call a shot for next week. Tennessee will be the 3 seed in Greensboro. That's not a shot. The 6 seed there will be Michigan State, and Tennessee will beat Michigan State. Everybody's going to be like, oh, Michigan State. Ah. Tennessee will beat Michigan State in advance of the Sweet 16.
It's not going to go over well in the pre-show meeting.
I you know what? Just got to call balls and strikes, Tom. Don't get mad at me.
Is that it?
Yep.
All right. Real quick, I'll roll through a couple called shots. Called shot number one. The Tennessee Volunteers will make it to the Elite Eight. Elite Eight.
Ooh,
Tennessee Volunteers.
Whoa.
Throwing it out
there.
There
is some shot calling.
Way less pressure because nobody thinks they're going to do anything, and they respond well to it, and they get to the Elite Eight. So there's called shot number one. Called shot number two, Jordan Love, MVP next year in the NFL.
Whoa.
I'm so ready for the Aaron Rodgers thing to have a resolution that I'm going nuts. Jordan Love, MVP next year in the NFL. And the final called shot, Luke Evangelista will record 2 goals and 2 assists tomorrow night against the LA Kings. 4-point night for Luke Evangelista. What do you think of that one?
Well, that's a shot, but that is not the shot. That may be the all-time shot of Call Your Shot Friday. Love, MVP next year. Like every single Monday, I'm going to bring that shot up.
I just want
you to know.
They win the NFC North, and they're 12-5, and he's the quarterback. I'm just saying.
And the Lions are just like, oh, another Packers quarterback that we have to deal with for a decade.
That will not yield.
There you go. I'm here for it, man. I'm here for it.
Big day at the SEC tournament today. Vanderbilt taking on Kentucky in the nightcap tonight. Tennessee and Missouri coming up today. Joe, big day at the SEC tournament. I know you're looking forward to it. And hopefully some more Joe Rexrow television time today as well, as we saw yesterday all over the place. Right behind the camera. Good stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking into renting a tuxedo in case they put me there again. I wasn't dressed up enough.
Many great screenshots.
Look for me in a powder blue tuxedo.
Including a nice screen capture from David Ubbin yesterday as well. Michelle, enjoy yourself today. It's going to be a wild day at the SEC tournament.
Today is going to be a much better day than yesterday. I'm so excited to cover all the games, and I'll be posting a lot of videos on 102.5 The Game social medias.
I'm going to Alabama, Mississippi State. I'm in the building for some college basketball. Be proud of me. That's what's happening.
Nice.
You're going to stay for Tennessee, though, right?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's the second game.
So it's going to be a big day. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rexrow. We'll have you covered all day long, live from the SEC tournament. Take your thoughts on that as well. Chase and Michelle coming up next. This is 102.5, 106.3, The Game.